You are listening to Business Day Spotlight.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Business Spotlight podcast. And for today, today is the 18th of April, 2019. And in studio, we are joined by a very learned panel because we're going to be discussing all things economics for the week. Joined in studio by Hotsebe, who is an economist covering the SA economy from Rand Merchant Bank. And I'm also joined by senior economics journalist Asha Speckman from the Business Times in studio. My name is Mudiwa, and we're going to be here for about, hopefully, about half an hour, just discussing some of the issues. How are you, ladies?
We're good. It's a short week, so we're happy.
You're happy?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I think just so that we can begin our discussion with the most recent news, last night or yesterday, the SOB had a monetary policy review, and I personally haven't had a chance to actually look at any salient point that came out from there. But I'm just going to start with Mpo and just ask anything that we should be watching out for from that announcement?
Yeah, I think the key message that came out is really what the SOB keeps reiterating, that monetary policy is more focused on anchoring inflation expectations around the 4.5% target band. And the other thing that also came out was that the issues to growth remain structural, so which means there's limited things that monetary policy can do to stimulate growth. And I think also what also came out was the SOB also highlighting the risks to growth coming from the load shedding that we experienced in the first quarter of the year. And that's expected to shave off around 1.1 percentage points from overall growth for 2018. And in fact, if we also then look at last week's mining and manufacturing numbers, they already show that growth in the first quarter of the year is going to contract. And in fact, we might be looking at sub 1% growth for 2019. So really not painting a great picture in terms of the growth outlook, and also highlighting the need for reforms, the need for policy certainty, and the need for decisive steps and actions to be taken to lift SA's growth.
Now, Mpo, we know that of course, growth is one of the areas that ratings agencies tend to zero in on. We've seen that we very recently dodged a bullet from Moody's, and I'm just curious, sort of, you know, what is your reading into the data so far? And you know, we have successive ratings agencies reviews that we're expecting one in May by S&P. I mean, how do you think that they, you know, may view all of this data in light of the fact that you know, under President Cyril Ramaphosa, we've had great confidence boost, and then confidence lost, and there's just been an up and down and an ebb and flow in terms of our confidence. How do you think ratings agencies will respond to the data?
Yeah, so I mean, the data front is not looking great, but if we then look at Moody's, they sort of acknowledge that is going to take a while to get out of the low growth environment. The one thing that they really warn about is that if growth were to be below 0.5% or to be at levels of around 0.8% for quite a persistent time, now then we really get into a great risk, because firstly, if you're not growing, the government is not collecting enough in tax revenues, it also increases your debt service costs, because your credit default risk sort of increases. So then we get into that type of territory where the risk of getting downgraded further then increases if our growth outlook does not pick up. But what's also counting in our favor, though, is the rebuilding of state-owned enterprises. So there's also somewhat of setting the low growth environment. So because there's much more confidence on the president and the leadership, there's more reform, or rather there's more steps being taken to make sure that governance at SOEs so that the governance at SOEs is really looking great. And also, we're not looking at further leakages in terms of corruption and all that. And his whole corruption campaign cleanup, that's counting greatly in our favor. So the reform of state-owned institutions, the rebuilding of confidence, that's counting greatly in our favor. And it's somewhat offsetting the low growth environment. But that can only get us so far, right? And that's why not only rating agencies, but investors overall, they're looking at tangible steps that government is going to take to really get us off the low growth environment. I think we can no longer go on the promises rhetoric. We need to see decisive steps and actions being taken to get us off the low growth environment.
And of course, promises rhetoric is what the political parties are relying on in the build up to the elections next month. And you say that investors at this stage are not buying into this. We are expecting the investment summit or the successive investment summit later on this year. Are investors likely to... Are they holding off because of the elections? Are you expecting a surge of investment after elections? And, or in fact, is President Cyril Ramaphosa's investment summit just really another white elephant in the making?
Yeah, so... I mean, if you think about investment decisions, it's more of a long-term outlook, right? So you make, you decide to invest today based on your five-year outlook. And given the lead up to elections, it's more of a wait-and-see approach because there's so much uncertainty around these elections in terms of how the current ruling party is going to fare, how are the smaller parties going to fare in the national elections, and what that means for policy going forward. So once we get past the elections and the new president is sworn in, we also then look at his cabinet, who he appoints to his cabinet, because the president can only do so much, right? He relies on his cabinet because they're going to be driving policy. They're going to be making sure that implementation takes place. So if we then see more or less of the same basket of eggs, what hope is there then? You know, is there really going to be change? And what would be different this time? So those are some of the key things that we're seeing, and some of the statements that we're getting from our investors and clients. So yes, first half of the year, more of a wait and see approach. And then again, going back to post elections, the cabinet, what does it look like? Are there decisive actions being taken? What are the steps? As we can no longer rely on the rhetoric.
I actually like the fact that you, because I think there's sort of been, maybe not a perception, but there's this idea that as soon as the elections are done, then the investment will flood in. The 30 billion in, what are they, promises or
commitments
will actually now start hitting South African bank accounts. But I think it's very nice that you highlight the fact that, okay, guys, yes, an election will happen. But after that, we need to see what team he actually puts into effect. But for now, I want to switch the discussion around maybe to consumers, because I think there's been some data that's come out recently, and that's around consumer price inflation and then the retail figures. I'm just going to ask Asha quickly first to let us know, like, what did the CPI come out as, and where was it? And was there anything amazing that came from the retail sales figures?
Mudiwa, CPI for March, CPI accelerated to 4.5%, which is still in line with the, it's in fact dead on the central bank's target. It is up from 4.1% in February. And in fact, other economists that we've polled have indicated that they expect a slight acceleration, but for CPI to remain within the Reserve Bank's 3 to 6% target range for the remainder or for the foreseeable future. Now we of course know that rising oil, international oil prices, and other pressures are beginning to impact on the inflation basket. And so there are very, very many variables at play at the moment. What we've also seen is that, and I think, Mpoh, you can correct me here, if we drill down, though, to the food basket, we're seeing fruit and vegetables rising at a faster pace than some of the other items. There remains a disinflation still with meat prices, but I understand that that scenario could change as well. And maybe Mpoh, you can pick up here.
So within the food basket, there are some varying factors and different moving parts in different directions. So, like, for instance, as you pointed out, your fruit and vegetables are beginning to pick up quite significantly. And if you also look at your bread and cereal, it's also accelerating quite significantly. But that's somewhat being offset by deflation in meat prices. Meat prices have been lower. They've been declining mainly to two factors, but the major factor has been the foot and mouth disease, the outbreak in January in the Vembe district. So that led to our beef exports, to a ban on our beef exports. So you can imagine if you are a meat producer, and then all of a sudden you don't have access to external market, what you'll then tend to do is to find other ways where you can sell your products, right? So we then saw some excess supply in the domestic market, which pushed prices lower. But what was also at play was consumer demand. So what was particularly interesting was in December, meat inflation started to moderate, and it moderated quite significantly relative to historical levels. Now,
what do
in
you mean
December,
by
moderate? So, so like for instance, if so we tend to look at the month-on-month number and compare that to historical levels. So like for instance, if the month-on-month for meat, for instance, is around 1.1 and then it comes out at 0.5. So then that also then indicates change in pattern. So December tends to be high demand month for meat because it's December, people are out, people are buying. So demand picks up, and then suppliers will then take advantage of that and increase prices. But, you know, it goes back to the consumer story. Consumers are constrained. And because demand was not as high as what you'd see historically, we begin to see some pushback from the consumer side. What was also interesting with the inflation number, so while it ticked higher around by 0.4 percentage point, it was mainly due to fuel inflation. But what was also interesting is that there's further evidence that consumers are really constrained. So if we then look at the rentals component, historically on a month-on-month, you'll be looking at increases of around 1.4, 1.6, the rental component to increase by that. But it increased by half of that, around 0.6. Now, that's quite low. So it even shows you that on rentals,
So landlords are charging less.
They're charging less.
Hold on. Are landlords charging less, or are landlords increasing their prices slower?
They're increasing their prices slower. So there's actually two things at play. So there's a risk. So like for landlords, if they increase risk If they increase these prices, at much higher rates than the going rate in the area, they face the risk of having the place vacant. So there's been some renegotiation. So tenants actually saying, well, I can't afford the increase. So the price is staying either the same as last year. Some landlords even offering some sort of incentive. So like for instance, new tenants, they'll say the first 3 months of, you know, rates free or something like that, because that's how strained consumers are. What's also been interesting, we've also seen more of a preference towards month-on-month rental agreements. So it favors both the landlords and the rentees, right? Because if it's a month-on-month, if then there's a special next month somewhere, I'm able to pick up, and move out and go and pay cheaper elsewhere. But for landlords as well, it also protects them, because if your rentee doesn't pay, you're not stuck in a 12-month contract where you cannot kick them out. You're then able to ask them to vacate and find a new tenant.
And also, of course, many consumers at this stage don't have a great credit records. Sorry, I'm digressing from food, but I last week the National Consumer National Credit Regulator, published figures for the fourth quarter of 2018, and indicating a record number of credit applications, I think as many as 12 million during the quarter.
Is that 12 million people?
12 million credit applications.
Wow.
But also quite a high number of rejections over the same period. So it's quite understandable that there's now this shift in the way the rentals are taking place. What are you seeing? What's your outlook for the consumer?
and
for the health of the consumer.
And can you also bring in the retail sales figures as well?
So, the outlook for the consumer is really not looking great, to say the least. So they're facing several pressures, and, we can go into them. To first touch on the credit numbers that you're talking about. So one thing that we're also seeing on the credit extension side is that, so while there's a pickup in credit extension, what's worrying is when you then look at the underlying factors, what's driving that pickup in credit extension. So like your mortgage credit extension, it's quite steady. But then when you then start to look at unsecured credit lending, so overdrafts, personal loans, those are starting to pick up, and that's what's driving the overall credit extension. Now, that's a bit alarming because it shows that consumers are under pressure and they're looking for other means to supplement their consumption. So, like, for instance, if we then also go back to fuel, fuel increased by around 74 cents in March. In April, it increased by over 1 rand. And in March, in May, we're looking at another fuel price increase. So if we look at, firstly, where oil prices are, if you compare that to December last year, oil prices are up by around 33%.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's quite steep. And that's what's contributing to higher fuel prices. But we also had the fuel levies that were announced in the budget. So that's also contributing to higher fuel costs. So fuel, it's you need to put fuel in your car every day to go to work. So if you're paying for more fuel, you then need to look at other places where you can cut back. Right. And then hence the retail sales figures. So they came out at around 1.1% against expectation of 0.6%. So while they beat market expectations, it's still nothing to be happy about. So like for instance, one is that in Jan, the increase was around 1.2, and that was also at the back of the sharp decline in December. So it was also more of a rebound from the sharp contraction in December. So really nothing to be overly optimistic about. And then if we also then look at wage increases as well, they have moderated quite significantly.
Yeah.
So overall compensation of employees, it's around your 4% levels. Now, we haven't seen that in a while. I mean, if wages increased by less than inflation,
yeah,
what does that tell you?
Mm.
You know, consumers are really worse off. And the other thing also to consider is that in the February budget, Treasury didn't fully adjust for bracket creep. So bracket creep is when your salary increases by an inflation adjusted amount, and there's a risk that you may jump to a higher bracket just because you got an inflation adjusted salary increment. Now that then means you're paying more tax. You're worse off.
Mm-hmm.
So your disposable income is it's even less. Because you're now paying more tax, but you only got an inflation-adjusted increment. Oh.
So life is tough for the SA consumer at the moment.
Life is tough for the SA consumers, and we're not seeing a significant pickup in employment.
I like the fact that you brought out wages, because I'm just trying to pull up the number. I think it was 5%, the Sibanye strike that's just ended. They got a 5% increase, which is marginally above, you know, inflation, not knowing what's going to happen next year.
Mm.
I'm just now wondering what type of trend that we'll have, you know, across the board in terms of, you know, salaries going up in the next 12 months.
Yeah, so I mean, if you also look at the wage increments last year, so if you then decompose that by different sectors, the only place where we're seeing higher wages of around 7% is in government. and also, so like if we also think back to the Eskom salary negotiations, where they got away with around 15%, and recently SARS as well, SARS employees were, you know, asking for
11%.
So only in government do we still see higher wage increments, but across the board, particularly in the private sector, you're unlikely going to see a high wage increment. So one, it has to do with companies protecting their profit margins, for one. So because the consumer is constrained, when they face higher cost pressures, they're unable to push that onto the consumers, because you increase your prices, consumers switch, and then, you know, they buy something else, substitutes. So then you lose your market share, your volumes decline. So they don't want to risk that in this environment. So they then have to find other ways of protecting their profit margins, or just protecting their market share.
Mm.
And one way to do that is obviously to then look at your other production costs. So your capital costs, your employment costs, you know, that tends to be the one area where corporates will tend to play with.
So it's an environment very fertile for labor action. So should we expect a few more strikes on the horizon?
I mean, I don't know. We also have to think back to historically during elections. Do we tend to see more protests? But then again, you may see the labor, strikes picking up. But then on the other hand, if we then go back to Sibanye, like 5% increase, you know, that also shows you how tough those negotiations must have been, and the risk that employees face as well, right? So I can you handle to go 5 months without your paycheck, what type of living arrangements are you then looking at if you go 5 months without any form of income, and what that means for your dad, for your family, and also is the benefit, you know, is it worthwhile?
Because of time, we are, you know, coming to the end of the show. But I wanted to maybe get maybe just pose one question to the room before we end. What factor, because like what Mpo has highlighted, there's a lot of factors that are, you know, that are facing SA consumers right now, whether it's fuel, whether it's wage increases, inflation, increased borrowing. South African consumers are going through the most right now. What factor do you think out of all of them would perhaps have the biggest effect of alleviating that pressure on South Africans, at least for the rest of 2019?
Yeah, I think so. One would be if we were to get some boost in sentiment.
Yeah.
So I think post elections, depending on how the market interprets the election results, it could provide a positive boost. Mm. The cabinet that you know, the new president will appoint. If there's hope that, you know what, now it's action time, then, you know, you're going to get that confidence boost as well.
Mm.
And I think the global picture as well, the global economy, because we're talking about a slowdown in growth, but then growth is still expected to be above long-term historical averages.
Yeah.
So if we then start to see particularly growth bottoming out in China and the Eurozone, which tend to be our major export partners, then you're likely going to see a pickup in global activity as well, and our export markets, so our export sectors will then benefit. And then you could see some employment gains in those sectors, which will be positive for consumers.
Asha?
If I can zero it down, I think from where I sit, overwhelmingly, you know, the sentiment is that if the Reserve Bank can keep interest rates, you know, unchanged for as long as possible, and, you know, you've highlighted and put all the pressures on that the Reserve Bank will have to consider. And in fact, according to their model, they still have penciled in an interest rate hike for 2019. So there are risks in leaning towards that. But I would assume that because of our weak growth, that the Reserve Bank may also factor that in, and if they could at least keep interest rates unchanged, that would bring some sort of stability or confidence back to the consumer. And in fact, it's also it's better for businesses for borrowing costs. And I would assume probably if we look at sort of overall, you know, the overall perspective of wages and everything else.
Yeah.
So that would be my take on it.
Yeah.
For me personally, I would go to the fuel price. I honestly think we need to rethink how the fuel price is constituted, especially the levy. I understand what the levy is for. I understand that Treasury has a hard job of, you know, trying to raise funds, and the fuel levy is one of the ways that they do it, albeit in a discreet way, because people don't realize most of the time that like half their fuel price is a levy that's going straight to government. But I really think if we were to rethink the fuel price, mainly because the fuel price has an effect on everybody. Like, there's no one who's doing anything that doesn't have anything to do with fuel and energy costs. And if we're to bring that input cost down for consumers and businesses, I personally think that it would do a lot. But it depends on what the cartel does with the oil prices. It depends. Yes, Asha.
In fact, Mudiu, I wanted to say, in fact, the government is one step ahead of you at this stage. This week, in fact, yesterday on Wednesday, the Department of Transport announced that they are they will be withdrawing the road accident fund levy, which is a major component in the fuel levy. So they are reviewing that. So that is likely, or hopefully that is going to result in some reconfiguration and hopefully some upside for the consumer.
I pray for that upside for the consumer. But that's it. Thank you so much to everyone who was listening to our podcast. This has been Business Day Spotlight. Thank you to our guests in studio with Port Sebe, who is an economist with Rand Merchant Bank covering the South African economy. And also thank you to my colleague, senior economics journalist Asha Speckman from the Business Times. Remember that you can keep in touch with us. You can find all of our podcasts on the Business Live website. You can also find the latest episodes of Business Live under the podcast Business Day Spotlight page. On Twitter, our hashtag is hashtag BD Spotlight, and you can subscribe for free on Ayono, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your podcasted. So that's it for today. Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning to everybody out there. I've been Mudiwa Mob Justice Kavaza, and thank you to our producer, Miss Paige Mueller.